It finally happened. This week, the few reporters left still covering transportation are now saying that an extension of the current surface reauthorization legislation may be the best we can expect from Congress next year. Politico reports an extension may already be inevitable, based on signals its reporters are getting from key sources, reminding us that the last reauthorization was extended 36 times. How long might an extension next fall actually last? The current program doesn't expire for another year, so this is a ways off, but it's reported another 6 months may be needed to get a deal. Extensions keep programs running, but often they stall new projects in the states, slowing the ability to solicit bids or keep to project timelines. Meanwhile, costs go up and workers go without jobs. This is Hard Facts. I'm Robert Johnson. It's not shocking that railbirds are now popping off on the possibility of a reauthorization delay into the early part of 2021. Just listen to the past few episodes of this show. We've raised the specter of extensions several times. Why would we do that? Because in the inability of Congress to get things done can be found a certain level of familiarity and predictability. Basically, this is how it goes. That's what's so frustrating to people who've been pushing this agenda. Steve Sander is one of those veterans of transportation funding wars. He's also the chief executive officer of the Associated General Contractors of America. Recently, he authored a piece for FoxNews.com calling for an end to the partisan bickering over transportation. Here's our conversation about that and the politics of finding a solution.
The frustration comes from the fact that ever since President Trump got elected, there's been a lot of happy talk about infrastructure. And by that, I mean that everyone points to infrastructure as something that Democrats and Republicans can work together on in a bipartisan fashion, and the American public will benefit. And they, presumably, they being the politicians, would benefit politically as well, because the polling across the board suggests that people continue to be disappointed and frustrated, not only by the state of infrastructure, but also about the toxic environment and partisan bickering that they see in Washington on a daily basis.
That's not really a new sport here in this city, though.
It's not, but it seems that it's been escalated. I'm not going to tell you how many years I've been in town doing this, but it's over three decades. And, you know, there was a time where on really big issues of consequence that the parties, the Democrats and Republicans, could get together and solve a problem. Now the environment, I think, continues to change where it's all about making the other team look bad. It's not accomplishing something. It's killing something or not pushing something with the intent of making the other party look bad. And that I think, is what is frustrating, even to somebody like me who tends to be a little bit cynical.
Back in those days, presidents of both parties did push gas tax increases, for example. This kind of work did get done.
Well, and, you know, yeah, I mean, to that point, I mean, let's remember that the last time that the gas tax was raised specifically for the purpose of infrastructure was Ronald Reagan. And then, of course, President Clinton raised it for purpose of budget deficit reduction. But within a few years, we were able to have that 4.3 cents redirected into the Highway Trust Fund. So, yes, we've had bipartisan efforts that have been successful. Remember, Reagan did it, a Republican president with a Democratic House and a Republican Senate. Clinton did it with a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate. But nevertheless, there have been examples of bipartisan support for a gas tax.
We'll have the link to the article in the show notes for this episode. But since it was published on May 22nd, what's been the reaction? Any feedback?
Well, no feedback from the principals, that being the Democratic leadership or the White House, but a lot of positive feedback from our members and chapters. They liked it. They liked the fact that we were putting a pox on all houses. You know, there wasn't anything partisan about this message. It was, hey, come on, guys, let's get our act together and let's do what you all say you want to do, which is to improve infrastructure and improve the quality of life for the American public.
People out in the rest of the country are getting a little fed up with this conversation, I assume.
Yeah, we have needs. The needs have been documented. The needs only continue to grow. We are in many ways exacerbating the problem by not addressing structurally deficient bridges, not addressing congestion issues that imperil the environment, not taking care of interchanges or crossings that provide safety issues, where we continue to neglect these problems. They're apparent to the traveling public. They want them fixed. They are tired of potholes and roads that have been neglected, and they'd like to see something accomplished here. And I think the other side of that is that you see the states taking more and more of a leadership role. You have a number of states, even red states, that have increased their gas tax in recent years without any real political pain inflicted upon the proponents.
Do you see more of that happening next year?
Probably, yes. States taking matters into their own hands. Yep.
Is it easier for them to do it?
I think so. And I think, the primary reason is every successful increase in either a gas tax or licensing fees or registration fees, the first step is to identify the improvements that are going to be made around the state if this additional revenue is approved by the legislature or the voters. So everybody's got something that they can point to that will be a tangible benefit. And the flip side of that is, unfortunately, a lot of people don't trust the federal government with their money. I mean, let's face it, the biggest earmark that became a problem for advocates for infrastructure was the so-called Bridge to Nowhere in Alaska. That memory has not faded. And people look at that and think about that when members of Congress or people in the administration start talking about increased revenue. Like, their response is, well, are you going to build more bridges to nowhere with that money? And I think that's a legitimate question to be asked. You'll have that discussion as well. I'm sure that anyone who's opposed to new revenue coming into the Highway Trust Fund will be happy to bring up that example yet again.
But as you've mentioned, more and more states are going it alone. They're raising their own money. They're setting their own priorities. The federal government's role is shrinking in a lot of places because the funding is coming from people within the state's borders, and they're not necessarily needing to ask Congress for permission.
They don't need Congress to ask permission, but at the same time, despite the good efforts of leaders from both parties in those states, there still are monumental challenges for infrastructure repair, and the federal government needs to be involved in that, particularly for those states that the federal share of their transportation infrastructure is 60 to 70% or more of their transportation budgets. So, they have a challenge in sparsely populated states in raising their revenues enough just to meet their state share of the federal allotment.
Now, in California, we saw an interesting thing happen where lawmakers were trying to take funding away, and those who supported it paid dearly on Election Day. Can you talk about that?
So there was an effort by a conservative group to put a ballot initiative on the November 2018 ballot that would repeal recently enacted increases in the state gas tax in California. And the idea was that that would perhaps generate a lot more conservative, get people out to the polls, and that that would support some vulnerable Republican congressional incumbents. That caused, obviously, the construction industry to have a call to arms, and between the building trades, construction associations, and engineering groups, caused us to raise $50 million in an effort to defeat that ballot initiative. I think I recall that we were successful by an 8-point margin. And the irony is that the intended beneficiaries of this, the vulnerable Republican incumbents, for the most part, lost. you have a situation now a lot of people aren't paying attention to, that California has 53 House members and only 7 are Republicans now. The unfortunate irony of this is that, you know, the industry had to raise $50 million to maintain this gas tax that had been enacted by the legislature. So we were able to protect that. And we at National AGC got involved in this. We put $250,000 into that effort, because we typically don't get involved in state ballot initiatives, but we saw this as a direct threat at all of the gas tax increases that states had recently enacted. Our concern was, if opponents of infrastructure, and that's what I'm going to call these folks, if they were going to be successful in a deep blue state like California, with a very expensive media markets, then they would be emboldened to go into what I would call states with lower hanging fruit, the West Virginias and Iowas and South Dakotas of the world, where you have cheap media, that there would be efforts to duplicate ballot initiatives to repeal recently enacted gas tax increases. So we're glad that we dodged that bullet in California. We hope we delivered a message that these cynical ploys are not going to be successful, and that if you want to try it again, that the industry will respond like we did in California, and we'll raise and deploy the necessary resources to protect legislative gains that have been made.
This was about more than just protecting a revenue stream for an industry that builds these projects. I can't imagine California without money to do roads and bridges and other types of infrastructure. It's a mess out there now.
Well, it is. And, you know, that's another example of long-time neglect and then trying to fix the problem. The legislature put the money in place. We're going to have improvements in the infrastructure system. California's population is now starting to decline. Perhaps it's reached its zenith, and perhaps it'll make it a more livable state.
Why do you think, with so many states doing this, that the members of Congress in those states are still afraid to do something here?
Because they're afraid of being primaried, particularly on the Republican side. There's always somebody in their districts who can run to the right of them if they were to support an increase in the gas tax. And they would make that a primary campaign issue for why the incumbent should be defeated.
The president could help with that.
I think the president has kind of floated the balloon, saying that he could accept perhaps a 25-cent gallon increase in the federal gas tax and then never brought it up again. So, and I think that's another issue of where these state campaigns have been successful. It requires executive leadership. It requires, in the states, you have governors that have either gotten out front and saying, we need to do this, and they've brought the legislature along, or the governors have said, if you get me a bill, I'll support it. I will sign it. I won't veto it. And so it gives cover to legislators. I mean, I think, you know, the first meeting that President Trump had with the Democratic leadership on infrastructure, you know, 6 to 8 weeks ago, where he said that he would support a $2 trillion plan, and that the congressional leader said, well, why don't you come up with a plan on how we pay for it? And he agreed to do so, I think was an unfortunate step on his part. His response should have been, it's up to Congress to decide how to pay for it, and it's up to me to decide whether I'll accept it.
It doesn't matter who you talk to here in this town. Everyone seems to have a slightly different view of how this is going to go as we look toward the end of the year and into next year. What do you think? Where do you come down on the chance for a big infrastructure package versus just another reauthorization?
I think the chances are pretty slim. And in a second, I'll get back to why it's still important that we beat the drum. But we've started to make the comment here that, you know, while there may not be an infrastructure bill, there will be infrastructure bills. And so you have a surface transportation reauthorization bill. that expires September 30th, 2020. So we do have a need there to get that fixed. We have, you know, the potential to identify, as we have, additional revenue sources, including the gas tax. Stepping away from surface transportation, we also have the chairman of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, Peter DeFazio, speaking openly and pushing for an increase in the passenger facility charge, which would generate a lot more investment in airport construction. We have the Water Resources Development Act up for reauthorization this year. And then we have all the appropriations bills that, you know, for instance, for the State Revolving Loan Fund for clean water and safe drinking water programs. We have, in this environment where people are talking about the need for infrastructure investment, we have opportunities for them to demonstrate that they're willing to provide additional investment. And so it's up to us to continue to push for that and offer them additional funding solutions. Now, going back to the whole question about the larger infrastructure bill, with all of the challenges we have in finding bipartisan solutions, we still continue to have leaders of both parties talking about infrastructure being a priority, and that it's something the federal government needs to be engaged in. And we need to keep the pressure on. We need to keep talking about it. We at AGC are developing a grassroots social media army. And these are people that aren't affiliated with the construction industry. So it's not construction employees or their families. It's people that we're finding on Facebook and Twitter that talk about this issue, and we're getting them in our network. And they are communicating with their elected officials to ask them, why aren't they doing anything on this? And I think this is essential. It's getting people outside the engineering and construction world, you know, people that have a direct benefit from increased infrastructure investment, and getting ordinary citizens and the public and voters to be delivering the message on this needs to be done.
What's the bigger hang-up in your view, the funding or the fact that neither side wants to give the other a win?
I think that's part of it. There's a lot of thought that even though the Democrats would really be interested in doing a big, bold infrastructure bill, that they're also very reluctant to give the president a political victory this close to the reelection campaign on a signature issue that he's been pushing. Converse to that is Democratic leaders came out of the first White House meeting. I talked about a $2 trillion infrastructure package. The Republican response was a lot of eye-rolling and off-the-record comments of this is going nowhere. So whether it doesn't happen for strategic reasons or it doesn't happen for financial or fiscal reasons, it's kind of hard to reverse that negative momentum.
The momentum of the election is rolling up on us, too. The Democrats are having their first debate this week. We're getting into that mode again. It won't end until next November. It seems like we're running out of time.
The comment you always hear in Washington, well, you know, it's an election year, or we're in election season, and so a lot won't get done. But the point of the matter is, when are we not in election season? Remember, the president filed papers for his reelection campaign on Inauguration Day, 2017. So it's a constant campaign season for everybody.
Well, you've been at this business a long time here. You have certainly heard that conversation once or twice. It's hard not to get a little bit jaded, I suppose. You know, I mean, the work still needs to get done. Ultimately, how do you see that happening? Is there a way?
Well, I think it's you just never give up on delivering the message, for one. Secondly, I think because we have had infrastructure elevated in the political discussion, some positive things have happened. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that last year there was over $20 billion in additional infrastructure funding over what was anticipated. So basically, if you add up all of the federal infrastructure construction programs, they typically add up to about $140 billion or so. And then there was an additional $20 billion added to that. That's not insignificant. And I think that is a testament to the fact that members of Congress recognize that there is more to be done here. And if it, you know, for now it's done in incremental steps, but perhaps invites a conversation about whether or not we want to reduce our competitiveness. You know, with all of the talk about climate change and the need to clean up the environment and air quality, you know, these infrastructure programs are in many ways the delivery system for a cleaner, healthier, and safer environment. And there ought to be bipartisan support for doing more to bring about that result.
The bottom line message then is, both to your members and people just listening at large, we have to keep at this. We can never stop. Don't get discouraged.
Absolutely. I like to use the analogy that if you're down 6-0 in the second inning, you still come to bat until there's 27 out.
How do people keep track of what AGC is doing on this fight?
Well, on our website, agc.org. Also, people that want to be part of that grassroots social army, it's called Americans for Better Infrastructure. And if you Google that, you'll have the ability to go on board. And then I think the other thing is through, you know, everyone's own association. They have portals to deliver the message to members of Congress and policymakers. So everybody should be encouraged to do that.
Next week, Dave Bauer joins us discussing the latest in this developing conversation from his perspective as president and CEO of the American Road and Transportation Builders Association. That's Wednesday, July 3rd on Hard Facts, a podcast production of the Portland Cement Association. I'm Robert Johnson. I'll see you then.